Do you live in L.A., Danny?
I live up in Laurel Canyon. I've lived up, you know, up above the Sunset Strip.
Yes, I know where it is.
Yeah, I bought my house from Alice Cooper.
That's cool.
So I've been here since 77. I got rid of the snakes and stuff.
I was going to say, what kind of a house did Alice Cooper and then a Danny Hutton have? What kind of house is it?
It has a big, long driveway, and you can't see any other houses around it. It's all pine trees. It's almost kind of like Atlanta. So it's very cool. It was a humble kind of wooden house, and over the years, I've changed it. It used to be a house, and then there was a deck, and then another house that Alice's girlfriend built. Then they had a palimony lawsuit. and it was strange because the other style of the house was different than hers. She had, like, black bathroom, black tiles, and all that stuff. Over the years, I put the house together, and I just made it a stone house. It's all stone now.
That's what you're supposed to have in a canyon.
Yeah, it's I love it. It's a beautiful, beautiful place.
And to be in the same place for 40 years, that's a nice bit of stability.
You're telling me. And what I paid for it, don't tell anybody. It's really good. I could never sell it by another house. I couldn't afford the taxes.
It's crazy in Atlanta. I can't even imagine what it's like in L.A. and in Hollywood area and all that.
It's crazy.
It's got to be.
Yeah, so I can't wait for the show.
I am a huge Three Dog Night fan. All of my schooling, everything, every freaking song that you guys have ever recorded and sang, I love.
We've had a great run.
You sure have. Yeah. You had a great run early on. It's amazing. I have the anthology.
Yeah.
And every song on that, you're talking about just song after song. That's a really extraordinary thing.
Well, you know, when you're doing it, when you're in the flow, it's just amazing. And the idea that a lot of the songs would last is amazing. We hold the record in Billboard Music Magazine for the most consecutive top 40 hits in a row.
Wow.
Believe it or not, by anybody.
That doesn't surprise me at all, honestly.
Crazy. It's a crazy thing, but every single we released was a top 40 hit. So anybody coming to the show, you know, every genre, we were on the easy listening charts, the pop charts, the rock and roll charts, the country charts. We went over to London, England, recorded with the London Symphony Orchestra, so we've been on the classical charts, too. So
it's insane.
If somebody's coming and they don't like a certain type of music, believe me, the next song will be completely different in the genre and the style. So that keeps it fresh for me. I think it was 2003, the last time we played the amphitheater with the Atlanta Symphony.
That Chastain?
Yeah.
Where we're going to be again in October.
I know.
I love it. So you're familiar with a lovely spot. And this event is so much fun. It's very special. So I'm very excited that you're going to be part of it.
I didn't know what to expect. And everybody was sitting with tables with linen on them and wine and people catering to them. I thought, this is where I would come. Every time a show was in town.
What you're doing is helping us raise money for, like, the children's park over there. It is such a beautiful area, and that's what, or Rock Chastain, that's what it's all about.
I love the idea for people that may be economically in not such a good place, they can...
That it's a public place.
Go and
do
anything. It's a great service you guys are doing. We can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Hey, tell us a little bit about your son, your prodigy here, I guess. I take it, right?
Which son?
I know, both of them, right?
Yeah, I got two of them. The older one moved up to Ojai.
I love Ojai.
Ojai is just incredible. So he's up there, and my granddaughters are going to school up there. So I said, will they have any new friends? He said, oh, yeah. He said, Malcolm McDowell was over yesterday. You know, from Clockwork Orange, with his little daughter.
I was just going to say, were his eyes propped open?
He's hanging around with some pretty cool people, or scary people.
Yeah, no kidding.
Clockwork Orange, geez. And my other son, our original producer and engineer, I have a studio at the house. So we recorded yesterday, and my son did some drum overdubs, a dash.
Mm-hmm.
My sons are good. They can play more instruments than me, and they can read music.
Are you saying that you don't read music?
No.
See, that blows my mind. That
you can be a really good typist, but it has nothing to do with writing a novel. The main thing is to be musical. You've got to be musical. There's a lot of people that start playing the piano at 3 because they're forced to, and by the time they're 25, they're like a good typist.
Yeah, but when they have both, I mean, your kids, obviously, they have the music gene, then they can read music. I mean, you could conquer the world, basically, right?
Yeah, I didn't get married until I was nearly 40. A lot of the other guys in the band had kids, and they went out on tours and weren't back for 6 months. And I decided to take my boys on the road with me. So we got the tour bus and all that stuff. The kids traveled separately in a big unit. So we'd stay at the campgrounds every night. But the boys ended up on this side of the stage. The Beach Boys and America and just all sorts of groups. So Frankie Valli babysat them.
Oh, my gosh.
Glenn Campbell babysat them in Hawaii. So for them, this is just very normal.
Well, didn't one of your sons, Melissa, who were you saying?
Dash. He used to play with Chaim, right?
Chaim. Yeah. He's out tomorrow with another girl. I guess he gets along with the girls.
Well, they're playing at Music Midtown this weekend here in Atlanta, so Melissa thought that was pretty interesting that he...
But he's not still drumming with them, right?
No, not right now. He's opening for Father John Misty.
Oh, Father John Misty.
Yeah, so they're doing nice size events.
Father John Misty's playing here in a couple of weeks, so he's probably going to be here, too.
Okay, how much do you love that TV show Lost?
I know they played a lot of our songs.
Holy cow. That scene where they find a Volkswagen and they're on the mountains and they turn it on, and I guess there was an 8-track tape or cassette or something in the car, and it was playing Shambhala, and they were driving the bug around. It was one of the most glorious scenes.
That's used a lot in movies. I'm really surprised. People that had never even think of that are fans of us. Rob Zombie.
Well,
he's a big fan. He's used our songs.
Who else?
Billy Bob Thornton.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I went over to his house. He bought Slash this house. So he's got a really cool studio downstairs. A guy named Kinky Friedman. I don't know if you know who Kinky is. Kinky's a good buddy of mine. So he phoned and he said, Billy is writing a book. So what he wants to do is have you come over and sit with a couple other people in the studio. And he's going to record it. And he's just going to talk. And whatever comes out, comes out. So he's over there and he said, Danny, he said, I want to play you something. And he played Out in the Country thing by his band. And he said, you know, I'm not really an actor. He says, I'm a musician, but I act to make enough money so I can play.
Is that crazy?
Yeah, you just never know. But stuff I read about him, I thought, I don't know if I'm going to like this guy. He was a sweetheart. He was a really nice guy. I read this article, and there was he had his band thing going, and he was up in Canada. So he did this interview with this DJ. It was televised, too. And after about 3 or 4 minutes, Billy Bob just was furious and started being nasty. And I don't know if he walked off, but I always thought, well, what? That's a jerky thing to do. But then I found out, he said, look, I will do the interview, but I don't want to do stuff about movies. I'm a musician. Please do not get into the movie thing. And the guy, of course, after a few minutes, just started about movies, disregarded everything he said. So now I kind of understand. Funny how the press, either they don't know or they don't get it or they don't want to get it sometimes.
But, you know, Dave, you mentioned some of the, you know, like Rob Zombie, Billy Bob, people that you were kind of surprised to find out were fans of the band's music. What do you think it is about the band's music that really does appeal to such a wide variety of musical types, too?
Well, I think it's diverse. And when we started out, we were not rookies. And there's nothing at all against the really young bands that only know 4 chords and are really exciting and have a great image. That's one kind of band that's cool. But I was like 26 or 27, and I've been the head of A&R at a record company. I've been on 5 labels, and every member of the 7 of the people at the time, they were all leaders of their own bands. They all could sing lead. So we didn't have the Wrecking Crew and Glenn Campbell and Leon Russell, all those guys played all those sessions for the Mamas and Papas, the Byrds and Fifth Dimension and stuff. It was our band, and we did all the arrangements. We did everything, and the songs were all melodic, and I like hooks in songs. Mm-hmm. That magic moment when you hear a record and all of a sudden it just does this thing where you just say, oh, that's cool. We try to put that in every one of our songs. So that I think the songs have really hooky choruses. They're well played, I think well sung, and they have harmonies in them. I don't care what country you're in, even if you don't know what people are saying, sometimes just the harmony will make it pleasant. So I had all of those kind of ingredients. Nothing against people that like jam bands that like to do 15 minutes, solos. But that doesn't speak to me.
Mm-hmm.
There's no better or no worse. It just depends on what you like. I like to cut the fat out of a song. I like every moment of the song to be doing something interesting. So I think that combination appeals to certain musicians.
You mentioned earlier how many different charts you charted on.
That's all of them, except for jazz. We've been on every chart.
Anytime Three Dog Night comes on, I'm like, crank it up. People go, who is that? I'm like, you got to be kidding. But it might be something a little bit deeper. But I don't think Pieces of April as that being a deep song. I think of that as that's Three Dog Night, those beautiful, beautiful melodies. And then you get Eli's Coming, which is just about as heavy as any rock song, or Mama Told Me Not to Come. And then Black and White, you got pop, yeah. The heavy rock.
But, you know, we did a lot of really heavy, heavy rock songs, but they usually weren't picked for singles. So people have this image of us as more like a pop rock kind of band, but we can get down. We're on the rhythm and blues charts. Our number one, you know, Mama Told Me Not to Come. I mean, we get really funky. And we used to get nailed in the early days. They'd say, well, you know, you've got to have an identity. You're all over the place. I said, yeah, we love that.
It works.
Yeah. Nowadays, it's more of a ghettoized kind of a thing where, you know, you go and it's like a heavy metal concert. Every song, I like AC/DC. A lot.
I love them too.
But you're going to get hit all night with that one kind of sound. I like to just move around.
Part of this is loving your vocals. I know the band was built around the vocalists. And
we were a band. People sometimes, they'll see this free shot of the three singers.
Right.
But we were always a band, all seven of us.
You still have an almost original band member with you, right?
Yeah, Michael. He played on every single guitar solo. Is him. He's fabulous. My feeling is that I started the band, and when we first started, we had a different guitar player, a different drummer. It was bass player left. We got another bass player in, so we've had different people in it. So I'm the guardian of Three Dog Night in my head, and the band, I would never go out if our band wasn't first-rate, top. We're firing on every cylinder, you know. None of the keys in the songs have been lowered.
Oh, wow.
We kick ass.
I love hearing you say that.
We sound as good or better than 1970. We're an incredible, tight unit. People are shocked. They say, my God. You know, they look kind of old, but they sound exactly the same. So I'm real proud of that. You know, my mother always said self-praise is no praise at all. But I got it. Well, she's from Ireland. She says, praise is no praise at all.
Well, you're praising the whole band. That's a little different, too, right?
Yeah, we're professional in the best sense of the word.
I know David Morgan, when I think about somebody coming from the association, he must have an amazing
voice. No, no, no. You shouldn't think of him as that.
But their voices were so beautiful, is what I'm saying.
He played keyboards.
Oh, so he didn't even sing?
He's a fabulous keyboard player. He was with Ricky Nelson for years. He's a fabulous singer, but his voice doesn't suit the association at all.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, because I was thinking.
He's a blues singer. He's an incredible baritone blues singer with a raspy, raw voice. Yeah, he's incredible.
And then your keyboardist, is he
Howard,
the other?
Yeah,
Howard Laverly. He's played with Frankie Valli. He's played with everybody. He's, you know, they're all over the top. The guy playing bass, Paul, he's been with us since, 1982, so how long is that?
Wow!
But he's really a blues guitar player, and he's playing bass, you know, so everybody can play all sorts of instruments. Everybody sings. We'll do an a cappella song with all of us singing together.
Oh!
Brian Wilson heard it up at my... I was Brian Wilson's best man at his last wedding, and he's a genius to me, but I played him the song, and he just said, oh my God! Angels. I just heard angels.
Oh.
Yeah, so for Brian Wilson to tell you that your a cappella song is good.
Yeah, he's like the king angel, right?
he's my idol. He's a genius. He's the guy. I was there when he did the Pet Sounds album, God Only Knows, and all that stuff. I was at those sessions.
You got to be kidding.
Brian produced us first. I brought the other two singers to Brian's house. So we recorded a song called Darlin', and then we did the track, and then the Beach Boys came back from the road and heard it and said, "What, Brian, that's a hit song. What are you doing?" So they took our voices off and put Carl's voice on it. I would have done the same thing. We were like this experimental young band. Brian wanted to do something more funky.
Did you see Love and Mercy?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
We helped get Melinda together. They had a spat. didn't, I guess, talk for a few days, you know, one of those things. And Melinda phoned me and said, please have Brian phone me. So he phoned me.
So you're really close to him because I saw him not too long ago at the Fox Theater.
Yeah.
I'm amazed at how well he's still playing and singing.
Oh, yeah, he's still doing it, yeah. I got married at this house in like 1980, 81, and we did it out by the pools. Brian was like overweight and had a beard at the time.
I can envision it. Time. Yeah.
So he walks in with a gorilla mask on. You know, a whole rubber one you put over your head. Yes. That was him just standing there with a gorilla mask on.
When you think about that time that, well, you've come up in, you've got to have a million stories like that. Have you ever thought about writing a book?
Nah, I don't want to do that. Everybody, a couple of the guys in the band have written books. But anybody who writes a book, what you really get is you get their version, and then there's another version by somebody else, and then there's the truth. It's just human nature.
Yeah,
and
but
then, you know, I think to make a book really interesting, you've got to just reveal dark things. You've got to just go through and parts of my life are nobody's business. Not that there's something bad, but I just don't want to get that deep.
My thought would be you just have to have a lot of great stories.
Yeah. That's... Well, I had the party house. My other house was a rental, but it was, you know, it was like an English cottage. I had barbed wire around the whole perimeter of the house and TV cameras. And it was like everybody going home through the canyon. It was the lower part of the canyon would have to pass my house. It was on a little parallel street to Lower Canyon. So 2:30 in the morning, everybody leaving the clubs would end up at my house, party for days. So I knew I'd made it when I got a knock on the door, and I opened the door, and it's John Lennon.
Oh, Lord.
John Lennon, Ringo, Harry Nilsson, Mal Evans, and is this little party is.
Oh, you got to be kidding.
Said, oh, all right, come on in.
How long did they stay?
Oh, they stayed about 3 hours, but he'd left Yoko. He was with Mai Peng.
Yes, that was when he was
with her. And then she finally just fell asleep on the couch. She was bored. And he was very, very nice. I think he came from the Troubadour with Harry. I guess they put a Kotex on his head and yelled at Tommy Smothers. You know, it was that night he had the big ruckus.
I was just going to say, there are pictures of that night. And he came to your house to party afterwards?
Yeah.
That Harry Nilsson, when they were hanging out together, that was some bad times for Yoko, I'll tell you.
Yeah, so.
Wow.
For him to come to my house, it was a crazy house.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so I have a lot of stories, but some I don't want to.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Well, you need a book.
My mother, my Irish mother, there was all this barbed wire, and she found a way to climb over the fence through the barbed wire. And I remember she came in, and there were, you know, there's a guy on the couch sleeping, and she got a broom and set a whacking. It was David Cassidy.
No, that's great.
One morning I had J. Paul Getty, Jr., the kid that had his ear cut off. Remember, he was kidnapped?
Yes, the kidnapped. Yes.
And she liked him. And then she went out the street and got him a pack of cigarettes.
What was your mom's name?
Kathleen.
Oh, see, there you go. She sounds like a...
Mandolin player, yeah. She sang all the time. I came from Ireland when I was 4 and a half, so I had all these uncles and aunts, and we'd usually once a month all get together at somebody's house, and you had to get up and do something. You had to either recite a poem, dance, or sing. I'd hide under the table. I was the baby. My Uncle Bill, he played about 8 instruments.
Was your dad Irish also?
Oh, yeah. During the Second World War, he took off to go to England. This was not a good thing to be Irish and joining, going to England, because Ireland was neutral. He went over in 1943, and he didn't come back until I was 16.
You're
kidding. The United States. We were the poor relations. We came over way after everybody else. All the older brothers and sisters went to America to find their fortune.
And then you got to come and find yours, and out of all of them, you're like the one that's rolling, huh?
Well, things went well. Well, my mother was always crazy. It was just my mother and myself. We were in the tough part of Boston at the time, running a boarding house. It was a big Victorian three-story place. Nice. We ended up having a boarder there, Mr. Maloney, for a while. Then there was this biggest robbery in America at the time, the Brinks robbery.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. The cops came to the house one night and took my mother down to the station and said, do you know this man here? And my mother said, yes, Mr. Maloney. His name is Trigger Burke, and he's a hired assassin. A guy named Spex O'Keefe. that was in the robbery. They were supposed to hide the money, millions of dollars, and lay low for a year. And this Specs O'Keefe was going around bars bragging about what happened, being in the robbery. So they hired this Trigger Burke to assassinate him, and he missed. But anyway, here's Mr. Maloney. I used to sit on the steps with him. They put him in prison before he's going to be sent up to the penitentiary for electrocution or whatever. He escaped, I think, dressed as a woman through the visitor's place. So then the cops came for 6 months. We had 24-hour protection, so I get to know all the Irish cops.
Oh, my God.
In the neighborhood. They'd say, tell your mother about coming. I like some Irish dude tonight, Danny. So I came home on my bicycle 6 months later, and my mother said, Danny, I got news for you. She didn't say Los Angeles. She said, we're moving to Hollywood next week. So we got on a train. I think she had $200 and sat on the train 3 or 4 days. And that was my entrance into Hollywood.
And you're moving to protect her?
No, Mr. Maloney said, look, I love Mrs. Hutton. I would never harm a child or a woman. He said, I'm hired to kill bad people.
Wow.
So he did have some answers.
Danny, you could write a book just based on that story. That is so
amazing. Anyway, this guy, Specs O'Keefe, right?
Yeah.
Ends up, and I didn't find out until about a year ago, he ends up, this is this gangster robber. He comes out to L.A. He ends up being Cary Grant's chauffeur. This is true. Is that insane?
That is crazy.
Yeah. And I didn't find out until he died.
Long after the whole thing. That is amazing.
Yeah, I do have some stories.
Yeah, because I'm even thinking those are like history stories.
I'm so grateful to my mother for bringing me out to Hollywood.
Oh, you got to be. What a beautiful place to be and raise your own kids, you know?
Yeah, you know, my mother was a waitress and doing all that stuff, and she got enough money to buy the house. It's not really the Hollywood sign, so.
Oh, my gosh.
I still have that house. You know, I rented out.
Oh, that's cool.
Everybody you could think of was at that house. Elton and Mama Cass.
Jeez.
Did you ever record
Jackson
anything?
Brown. Jackson was there with Lowell George. Little Feet. Brian came over. All the time, people said that Brian was in bed, you know, that crazy period he had.
Uh-huh.
He was at my house.
Nobody would have believed it.
I'm really smart because I've done about every stupid thing you could do, every dumb thing. But luckily, I've only done it once. I learned from it, you know.